Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure for me to give a colloquium here at Perimeter Institute. I always enjoy being here. So today I'm going to tell you about some progress, recent progress in theoretical physics related to the problem of hydrodynamics and anomalies. What is the connection between hydrodynamics and anomalies? The plan of my talk will be as follows. So first I will review what is hydrodynamics, and then talk about the anomalies, and then jump to more theoretical topics of gauge gravity duality, a technique that came out from string theory that has changed the way we look at quantum field theories. And then we will come back to hydrodynamics and try to understand the, how quantum anomalies can change the hydrodynamic theory. This is a very interesting topic where a lot of people has contributed their work. In this talk, I will not try to give an exhaustive overview of all the work. We will trace out a single path in a rather complicated story, but we will see how this some different way of thinking about one single problem can lead us into a very interesting progress. So hydrodynamics is a very old topic, a very old subject in physics. I think the word hydrodynamics appears in the 18th century as in the title of the book by Bernoulli. We now know many examples of hydrodynamic theory. The most well-known example of hydrodynamics is encapsulated in the so-called Navier-Stokes equations that describe the time evolution of normal fluid. In order to describe the time evolution, you write down some equations of motions. These are, in for a simple fluid, the continuity equations, which tell you the conservation of mass. And then the momentum conservation equations, which is normally called the Navier-Stokes equation. And then also, if you want to understand the heat transport in the fluid, you also need the energy conservation. So this simple set of equations, a very small number of equations, all come out from conservation laws and very small number of additional assumptions, give rise to a this equation can describe very complicated physical phenomena. For example, turbulence, if you have a flow at very high Reynolds number, the solution to the equations, to the simple differential equations on the previous slide can be very complicated and they exhibit interesting scaling properties. If we now talk about relativistic physics, there are relativistic generalizations of the Navier-Stokes equations that was developed, I think, in the 1930s. Again, in order to derive, in order to describe the evolutions of a relativistic fluid, we need to look at the conservation laws. In this case, we have conservation of energy momentum. The divergence of the energy momentum tensor is always zero. In any sensible relativistic system, we should have a conserved energy momentum tensor. And in many cases relevant for the physics, we also have a conserved charge. For example, this conserved charge may be the baryon charge. So we write down an equation, d mu, j mu equals zero, that describes the conservation of this charge. So if we look at this equation, you see that there are more unknowns in the equations than the number of equations. For example, there are 10 components of the symmetric 4x4 tensor written here. So we have to have a way to reduce the number of variables to be equal to the number of equations. And this is done through the so-called constitutive relations. In the one example of these constitutive relations is the equation that tells us what is the current in terms of the velocity of the flow and the gradient of the density. So this equation has a very simple physical meaning. J, the current, for example, of the baryon charge is equal to the sum of the two parts, two terms. The first term, rho v, is advection if we have a flow with the velocity v. And if our fluid has the density rho of the baryon charge, then the current will be, the baryon charge will be advected by the current. So that is this physics give rise to the rho v term in the constitutive relations. But current can also be transported not just by the flow, but also by diffusion. If we have a gradient of the density, then the charge will try to move in the direction opposite to the direction of the gradient. And that is the second term here, d times gradient of rho. The coefficient d is the diffusion coefficient, and that is another contribution to the constitutive relation. So with the help of this equation and a similar equation that I didn't write down for the stress component of the stress energy tensor, we can close the system of equation and we have a well-defined system of hydrodynamic equations that describe the time evolution of any relativistic fluid. And again, this simple system of equation can describe many interesting physical phenomena in astrophysics. For example, it can describe the highly energetic relativistic jet, or the physics of the quark gluon plasma created in heavy ion collisions. So this is all has been all that we talk about is at the classical level. Usually the hydrodynamics is perceived as the classical theory. The beginning of the theory of quantum hydrodynamics, in my view, can be traced to a letter written by Kapitsa to Molotov, who was the chairman of the Council of People's Council of the Soviet Union, Supreme Council of the Soviet Union. And in this letter, he wrote the following. Recently, while studying helium near absolute zero, I found a whole series of new phenomena, possibly shedding light on the most mysterious area of modern physics. I need a theorist's help. In the Soviet Union, the theorist who knows the subject completely and whom I need is Landau, but he has been under arrest for a year. Can you ask the NKVD, which was the KGB at that time, to speed up Landau's case? If not, can we use his brain for scientific work while he's sitting in his cell? So it was this letter apparently made a strong impression on the Soviet leadership, and after a few days, Landau was released from prison, and he started working on the problem. And in 1941, he wrote a paper on the hydrodynamics of superfluid helium, which is an amazing piece of work, in which he took what is now can be thought of as a very non-trivial, non-canonical way to look at the problem of superfluid helium. He took the Hamiltonian of a classical fluid and tried to quantize it. So try to treat the density and the velocity of the fluid as quantum variables. And from the canonical Poisson brackets, you can derive the commutation relation between the velocity and the density and between components of the velocity itself. So in this way, and with additional physical intuition, he constructed the hydrodynamic theory of superfluid helium. From the modern perspective, we now know that the superfluid behavior in helium is related to the Bose-Einstein condensation. It's related to symmetry breaking, to the Goldstone theorem, and the hydrodynamic theory that Landau has built in the limit of zero temperature can be thought of as the equation of motion for that Goldstone boson. For a long time, it was thought that quantum effect exists only in superfluid. But very recently, from around 2007 until now, people have found quantum effect in hydrodynamics of some normal fluid. And that was very surprising. This turned out to be related to a phenomenon in quantum field theory called quantum anomalies or triangle anomalies. And as we will see, it was almost an accidental discovery made through gauge gravity duality. So before talking about the hydrodynamics theory with anomalies, let us make a detour and remind ourselves about the pions. Pions were particles that were proposed by Yukawa in 1935 as the carriers of nuclear force. It was discovered in cosmic ray in 1947. And soon it is known that there are three types of pions, positively charged pions, negatively charged pions, and the neutral pion called pi zero. So pi plus and pi minus decays through weak interaction, but pi zero, the neutral pion, decays electromagnetically into two photons. Soon after the discovery of the pion, it was found that the problem of computing the decay rate of the pi zero is a very subtle problem. So in 1949, there is a paper by Fukuda in Miyamoto where they try to use Feynman diagrams, the quantum electrodynamics, perturbation theory in quantum field theory to evaluate the rate of pi zero decay. And they say that by using the method of evaluation that has been applied by Schwinger, we have obtained a convergent but non-gauge covariant result for the gamma decay into neutral mesons. The fact that the result is non-gauge invariant means that there is something wrong. So they wrote that thus in the present state of the field theory, we cannot give an unambiguous lifetime for the neutral meson. And around the same time, Steinberger also worked on the problem. He was using the method called the Pauli-Villars regularization, and he found a correct rate for the pion decay, pi zero decay, but he also noted that this method is not without ambiguity, and if you evaluate the diagram using a different way, you can get the result that is much smaller than the rate that he has computed. So this puzzle of pi zero decay can be thought of as follows. So you have to compute within quantum field theory of the pi zero. So the pi zero will couple to some fermions at the time when Steinberger was working on the problem. This particle is considered to be the nucleon, but it can be also thought about as quarks. The result actually doesn't depend very much on the type of particles that run in this loop. So this particle emits two gamma. When we write down this this integral, the loop integral, we find an expression that, roughly speaking, is the type of the integral that is written here, the integral of dx of f of x plus a minus f of x. So this integral is ambiguous. And to see that, we can try to compute it in two different ways. So first, we can expand in Taylor series over this, this a here and write this integral as dx a f prime. And since this is the total derivative, the integral is going to be a times f at plus infinity minus f at minus infinity. On the other hand, we can do a change of variable in this integral and reduce it to the integral of f of x minus f of x, and that would be 0. Of course, the reason we obtain two different results for the same integral is that this integral is divergent and required regularization. And at that time, when people, in 1949, it wasn't clear which kind of regularization is the correct one. The key for the understanding of the puzzle of the pion decay, which then leads to a huge progress in the understanding of quantum field theories, was identified by Adler, Bell, and Chakiv in 1969. What they understood is that in massless electrodynamics, the number of left and right-handed electrons are not conserved individually, although the classical theory, in the classical theory, the number of left and right-handed electrons are conserved. In the quantum theory, only the sum of the two can be made conserving. So if we have a theory of massless particles, this massless particle can exist in two different polarization. So consider massless spin 1/2 particles. The spin of this particle can point either in the direction opposite to the direction of motion or in the direction parallel to the direction of motion. So this polarization is called left-handed polarization, and this polarization is called the right-handed polarization. And it is a crucial property of quantum electrodynamics or any gauge theory that the chirality of a particle does not change when that particle emits or absorbs a gauge boson. So for example, in electrodynamics, if I have a massless, suppose the electrons is completely massless, or suppose that we have an electron with an energy that is much larger than its rest mass, so that its rest mass can be neglected. If that electron is left-handed, when it emits a photon, it will remain left-handed. If it is a right-handed electron, when it emits or absorbs a photon, it would remain right-handed. So at the level of the individual processes of photon emission or absorption, or at the level of the Feynman diagrams, chirality does not change. The chirality of a particle doesn't change when it moves in a classical electromagnetic field. But it turned out that chirality is not conserved in quantum field theory, and that is the crucial realization of Adler, Bell, Chakiv, that now that is now called anomalies. So to explain the anomalies, let us first consider the problem of relativistic particles in a magnetic field. So imagine that we have magnetic field perpendicular to some plane, and we have some particle that move in this magnetic field. The classical motion of the particle will be either a circle or a spiral. But in order to find the quantum spectrum of the particle in the magnetic field, we have to solve the Dirac equations. So here is the spectrum of a massless Dirac particle in an external magnetic field. So here I assume the magnetic field to point along the z direction. Since the magnetic field is pointing along the z direction, all the momentum of the particle along the z direction is conserved. And we can classify all the energy eigenstate of our particle by Pz. The motion of the particle in the transverse xy direction is periodic and hence is quantized. And once we solve the Dirac equation, we will find the following spectrum for the electrons in the magnetic field, namely that these spectrums are organized into discrete level called the Landau level. Property of this Landau level is that they come in both positive and negative energies. All the negative energy state has to be filled in the vacuum. These levels can be numbered by an integer called n, and the energy E squared is equal to Pz squared plus 2n times the magnetic field. The crucial feature of the spectrum is that if n is not equal to 0, the energy level is left-right symmetric. There is one left-handed, one line here corresponds to a left-handed particle, and another line corresponds to a right-handed particle, and they are completely degenerate. On the other hand, the n equals 0, the 0 Landau level, is not chiral in the sense that we have one branch of particles here. The right-handed particles have E equal to Pz, and the left-handed particle have E equal to minus Pz. Okay. So when we solve the Dirac equation, we find that except for the zero Landau level, all the other levels are symmetric, and the zero energy, the zero Landau level is chiral. And that has a very important implication when we try to understand how our system reacts on electromagnetic field. So here, let us first redraw the picture that we have in the previous transparency, concentrating our attention on the zero Landau level. So again, the zero, there is a right-handed, the branch of right-handed electrons and the branch of left-handed electrons. So electrons is considered to be massless in our case. Now, all these states below zero are filled. It was the Dirac C. Now it is some state in the Dirac C in a high magnetic field. Let us now try to turn on an electric field, also pointing along the direction of Z. So let us try to turn on an electric field parallel to the magnetic field. Now, what happened with the electrons? The electron will feel a force proportional to the electric field, and the electrons right here will move up. All the electrons will try to increase its momentum, because the force, the derivative of the momentum over time is a force, and the force is proportional to the electric field. And so we have these electrons. The red electron, the right-handed electron, will move up, occupying a new state here with positive energy. And the left-handed electrons, on the other hand, will also try to increase its momentum, but they will move down. And here, hand, you have two holes. And so if you look at this picture, now we found that the total number of electron, the right-handed electron, minus the number of left-handed electron is not conserved under the combined action of the electric and the magnetic field. One can do the calculation more accurately and find that the rate of change of this axial charge is equal to the product of the electric field and the magnetic field. The fact that the electric field appears here is because the rate that electron changes momentum is proportional to E, and the fact that there is a magnetic field in this rate is related to the fact that the degeneracy factor of the Landau level is proportional to the magnetic field. And so here we found that that massless electrodynamics in an external electromagnetic field does not conserve the separately the number of right-handed and the number of left-handed particles. In particular, the difference between of the two numbers suffers a change under when we have a parallel electromagnetic field, electric and magnetic fields. So this calculation may remind you of the paradox in mathematics of the Hindbergs hotel, in which we the hotel is completely full, but you can always put one more guest by shifting all the guests to the next room. So in our case, this situation, for example, where we simply shift all the electron here two level up, and all the right-handed, left-handed electron two level down, one can ask whether that corresponds to the total chiral charge, which is infinity minus infinity being equal to zero or being equal to four. And that was the source of all the confusion in the beginning with the rate of pi zero decay. What was found by Adler, Bell, and Chakiv is that there is a correct way to do the calculations. If you want to enforce the gauge invariance with respect to electromagnetic interactions, the result for the pi zero decay is completely fixed. In order to do the calculation correctly, we have to make the chirality non-conserving in an external electromagnetic field. So a full understanding of anomalies in quantum field theories was achieved by 1980s. And there is very deep connections of the phenomenons of anomalies to topology. But a possible connection between anomalies and hydrodynamics somehow went completely unnoticed before a very convenient technique to combine hydrodynamics and anomalies was discovered. And that technique is the gauge gravity duality, to which we will turn our attention now. So gauge gravity duality is also called holography, is based on conjecture by Mandesina in 1997 about the duality between certain quantum field theory and a certain string theory. In the original example that Mandesina considered, the quantum field theory is the n equal 4 supersymmetric Young-Mills theory. And that theory can be thought about as the theory describing the collective motion of an object called a stack of n d3 brains. In string theory. And Maldacena conjectured that this object can be described in an equivalent way. The same object can be described in a different language. It can be described by a string theory in ADS5 cross S5 space. So it is a 10-dimensional space, a product of anti-de Sitter space in 5 dimensions. A space of constant negative curvature in 5 dimension and a 5 dimensional sphere. So the gauge gravity duality has become now a very useful tool for us to understand the strong coupling regime of some quantum field theories, of a class of quantum field theories. And the way it is useful comes out from this identification that I want to talk about now. It is the correspondence between a parameter in the quantum field theory and another parameter in the string theory, namely the Hoof coupling, the product of the charge G squared, charge square of the particle and the number of color in the n equal 4 super Young-Mills theory, is equal to the fourth order of a ratio of the curvature of space and the size of elementary strings, the string size. And the way that this relationship is useful is that if one takes the limit g squared times nc to be very large, the quantum field theory becomes very complicated because the parameter of the perturbative expansion becomes very large. We cannot do perturbation theory anymore. But there is a simplification on the string theory side, namely when the size of the string becomes very small, the theory of strings becomes the theory of particles, and string theory becomes gravity, in which explicit calculation can be done very easily. And so gauge gravity duality have allows us to map a difficult regime in field theory into an easy regime in string theory. Soon, the gauge gravity duality has been generalized to finite temperature. At finite temperature, one can map the physics of the quark gluon plasma. Maybe one should put, I should put the quark gluon plasma in quote. This is a quark gluon plasma in a class of model described by gauge gravity dualities. For example, N equal 4 super Young-Mills theory. The quark gluon plasma there can be put into correspondence with the black hole in ADS space, and one can identify the entropy of the quark gluon plasma with the entropy of the black hole. This identification allows us to compute the thermodynamics of strongly interacting system through its black hole duons. So around 2001, the connection between black hole physics and hydrodynamics was also found, in which we now understand that the viscosity of the quark gluon plasma is mapped onto the absorption cross-section of gravitational waves by black hole. And since then, many facts about hydrodynamics has been reproduced using black hole physics. So for example, one can simulate complicated flow of fluid by solving the Einstein equations in around the ADS black hole. One can find some phenomena similar to turbulence by doing a computation in gravity. But there was a small problem. And that problem was seen first by Minwala and his collaborators around 2007. So they were looking at some solution, some known solution in gravity, a rotating black hole. And they noticed that if the black hole exists in ADS space, its radius can be very large, large compared to the inverse temperature. And in this regime, a rotating black hole can be put into a correspondence with a rotating fluid using the gauge gravity duality. The black hole is dual to a quark gluon plasma, so a rotating black hole would correspond to a plasma, some kind of fluid that rotates. And using this correspondence, one can put a write down equation establishing the correspondence between quantities in black hole thermodynamics and dynamics and the thermodynamics of a rotating fluid. And they can check the correspondence explicitly because the black hole solution are known exactly, and the fluid dynamic solution is known in expansion over the parameter 1 divided by the product of temperature and the radius of the black hole. If the radius of the black hole is large, this becomes a small parameter. So they did this check, and they found that black holes and fluid match perfectly to leading order in this small parameter. But while the existing solution to the Einstein equation predicts that black hole thermodynamics has a correction at order 1 over TR, the standard fluid dynamics predicts that the first correction is 1 over TR squared. So there is a problem arising not right away at the leading order in the expansion, but only when we look at the correction, we see that there is some problem in the correspondence between black holes and fluid. And this discrepancy remains unresolved for about 2 years. And then the resolution to this puzzle was found simultaneously by two groups. And they found that the mismatch is due to a new term in the hydrodynamic equation of N equal 4 super Young-Mills theory. This arises from the anomaly in four-dimensional theory, which is modeled by a Chern-Simons term in the five-dimensional dual. So here, the way that the new hydrodynamic equation was found is from the gravity dual. So using the gravity dual in higher dimension, they found that in the equation for the current that correspond to a charge of a black hole, this current of the charge, it is a current of a conserved charge in quantum field theory, which can also be mapped onto a charge of the black hole. This current consists of the two familiar terms that we have talked about before, the advection and the diffusion term. But in addition, there is another term that is proportional to the vorticity of the flow. So this term is not ruled out by parity, because the theory that we deal with here has chiral fermions. So this term cannot be ruled out, but it still seems very strange. And it is strange by there are two reasons why this new term is very strange. So let us first try, let us imagine that in the hydrodynamics of our ordinary fluid, there is a phenomenon similar to this one. What would happen? So that would lead to a chiral separation by rotation. So imagine that we have a cup of water, and then we drop sugar into that water and dissolve sugar in the water. Recall that sugar molecules come in two different chiralities, left-handed and right-handed, and only one of the handedness can be digested by humans. Now, if we have this solution of two types of sugar and we try to rotate a cup, we can ask the question whether the two different molecules of sugar with two different chirality would go into two opposite directions. So if the molecule of sugar behaves like electrons, or massless particles, massless fermions in the N equal 4 super Young Mills plasma, you would see this effect. In sugar, actually, we can argue that the result, the sugar molecule should not be separated. One can think about that naively like this. The sugar molecule can be thought about as a little screws. If they rotate with respect to water, they would move. It's called the propeller effect. But if you try to rotate the cup of water, then the molecule in the thermal equilibrium state, the molecule of sugar would rotate with the same angular velocity as the water, and eventually there will be no current, no chiral current in this solution of water. In the case of quark, as we will see, there is a reason why that doesn't work. But there is a second, more powerful argument that this effect should not exist. It is that there is no mention of this term in the sixth volume of Landau and Lipschitz. And in any of other 10th volume, there is no mention of the chiral, of the additional contribution to the current in hydrodynamics. So I looked through all the 10 volumes, and there are many places where Landau and Lipschitz were very careful about parity and parity breaking, which term is allowed by parity breaking. But this term is not among the terms that he discussed, in particular in the volume 6, fluid mechanics. So there is a reason why people have not thought about the vorticity term in the current before. So this is the entropy argument. The entropy argument is the following. The hydrodynamic equation is not time reversal invariant, but it must be consistent with the second law of thermodynamics. That means that there must exist an entropy expressible in terms of hydrodynamic variables, the local velocity, local temperature, etc., which does not decrease with time. And if one applies this argument, which normally we would see that this condition allows only shear viscosity, bulk viscosity, and thermal conductivity in a normal fluid. And let me show you how this argument works. It is slide more for the expert. Suppose we have a relativistic fluid with a single U1 charge, single U1 conserved U1 charge, and we write down the equation of hydrodynamics. So here we have the ideal part of the stress tensor and the correction, the first order correction, sometimes called the viscous part of the stress tensor. And we also have here the equation of conservation of U1 current. Here again we have the ideal fluid part of the current, and we allow some correction to the current due to dissipative effect. So the standard manipulation is to replace this epsilon plus P in the stress tensor by using thermodynamic relations to Ts plus mu n. It is just thermodynamics. And then we choose to multiply these two equations by some carefully chosen factors and sum these two equations together. And after that, we can see that the sum can be written in a form very similar to the equations of production of entropy. So here d mu s, where s is the local entropy density times u mu, the velocity, is equal to something on the right-hand side. That thing on the right-hand side would be zero in ideal hydrodynamics, but it would be non-zero if we have correction to ideal hydrodynamics. So at this moment, the right-hand side does not seem to be guaranteed to be positive. And the way to make it, to try to make it positive, is to modify the entropy current, including some another carefully chosen piece, and then transform the right-hand side into a form in which we have a product of the dissipative part of the current and the stress tensor to the first order derivatives of the thermodynamic variables. And at this moment, we now can choose this, we now can put constraint on this first, this correction requiring that the right-hand side has to be positive. And that is the argument that leads to the identification of three possible kinetic coefficients in hydrodynamics: the shear viscosity, the bulk viscosity, and the thermal conductivity. So this argument is the one that is presented in the sixth volume of Landau and Lipschitz. So on the other hand, there seems to be a very solid argument against the existence of any modifications to hydrodynamics. On the other hand, the holographic computation is so simple that we cannot see any mistake in it. So after we can look at the how the calculation is done in gauge gravity duality. We first write down a holographic five-dimensional model consisting, the minimal model would consist of gravity and a U1 gauge field to model the conserved charge in the dual field theory, and a Chern-Simons term in order to encode the information about the U1 anomalies, U1 cube anomalies in that theory. Okay, so when we write down the Maxwell equation for the gauge field, we find that the Maxwell equation is modified due to the Chern-Simons term. So when we solve this equation, there is one particular combination of indices in this equation that leads to this new effect. In particular, when this index mu here is I, these two indices is zero and the radial coordinate, and these two indices are the others, two spatial indices parallel to the field theory directions. We find that this correction due to this term would make us make a mu. So we know that AI has to be proportional to the velocity of the motion of the fluid from the mapping between gravity and and fluid mechanics, and this is the leading order result. We put that into the Chern-Simons term, and we find that there is a correction to delta A that comes from the Chern-Simons term that is proportional to this Fijk here, that is the curve of the velocity. So, and then using the gauge gravity duality, we can read out the asymptotics of A near the boundary and identify that with the current. So the consequence of this calculation is that if we use gauge gravity duality, which we believe to be correct, that would, and the consequence of the correctness of the gauge gravity duality is that we can derive hydrodynamic equation from the Einstein equation. The hydrodynamic equation that we have is a non-standard one. It's not the one that that is presented in standard textbook. So it was a puzzle for us, and after a lot of struggle, Piotr Surupka and I found that by carefully following the Landau-Lifshitz argument about the entropy, the positivity of the entropy production, in particular, the positivity of the entropy production in the presence of external electromagnetic fields, we found that the vorticity-induced current is not only allowed, but it is actually required if anomaly is present. So we also found that this coefficient of proportionality between the current and the curve and the rotational speed of the vorticity of the fluid can be related to the coefficient in the anomaly, the same coefficient that appears when you compute the one-loop graph, similar to the one-loop graph in the decay of the pi zero mesons. And our formula reproduces correctly the value of the coefficient in n equal 4 super young mu theory. But soon, Ost and Neyman, in particular, and other people found that if the current is of the type that of the U1 axial type, then there is a possible extra contribution to the coefficient of the vorticity, which was neglected by us. So this coefficient might contain the mu square, the dependence of the this coefficient on the chemical potential is mu square that was found by us, but there are also a possible correction that is proportional to T square that would be non-zero even when the chemical potential of all charges is zero. And later, Landsteiner and collaborators found this coefficient C prime at weak coupling, and they found that it seems to be related to gravitational anomaly. And later, they also found this C prime, C prime also appear in holographic model with gravitational anomaly. And the type of gravitational anomaly we were talking about here is the anomalies that connect the axial current with the curvature. So it was, for some time, it was quite mysterious how gravitational anomalies can appear in flat space and contribute that strongly to hydrodynamics. And very recently, Christian Jensen, Lukana Yagam, Amos Yarom, found an argument that relate the gravitational anomalies and the hydrodynamics. And the coefficients of the current induced by vorticity in a finite temperature plasma in hydrodynamics. So it seems now that we have quite a reasonable understanding of the connection between hydrodynamics and anomalies without relying on gauge gravity duality. But one should emphasize that gauge gravity duality has been instrumental for obtaining the correct result. In particular, using gauge gravity duality, it was very simple to write down to derive the hydrodynamic equation from the microscopic theory. Now, once we have understood that that anomalies give non-trivial correction to hydrodynamics, and that correction is due to very fundamental properties of the theories, for example, anomalies or the second law of thermodynamics, we can get rid of the assumption of strong coupling allows us to use gauge gravity duality. We can ask the question, what happened in weakly coupled theory? If we have a weakly coupled quantum field theory, at very long distances, at finite temperature, the effective theory is still hydrodynamics. But there is also an intermediate step, intermediate effective theory between quantum field theory and hydrodynamics, called the kinetic theory, the same type of kinetic theory that Boltzmann wrote down at the end of 19th century. One can, at weak coupling, we can go from quantum field theory through the kinetic theory, through the Boltzmann equation to hydrodynamics. At strong coupling, there is no intermediate step. We have to go directly from quantum field theory to hydrodynamics. And there are not many ways to do that except for gauge gravity duality. So this kinetic theory plays a very important role in physics. For example, one important kinetic theory is the Landau's Fermi liquid theory. So there is anomalies. Suppose the quantum field theory has anomalies. We know that the hydrodynamics must have an anomaly required by anomaly matching. And so the question is, how does the anomaly appear in the kinetic theory? So that seems to be quite a counterintuitive thing for the kinetic theory to capture. In the kinetic theory, basically we follow the evolution of particle in phase space. So we write down some Liouville equation. We follow the trajectory of each particle in phase space. So by definition of the kinetic theory, the particle number has to be conserved. However, we subject this particle to. And how one can then get the non-conservation of some charge, for example, the chiral charge in this description. So this turned out to be related to some phenomenon that condensed matter physicists have been thinking about for some time. In the context of solid state physics, but in our case, we can also apply this way of thinking to the motion of particle, spin 1/2 particle with a definite helicity. So the main thing is that for particles, for massless particle with a definite helicity, spin and orbital motions are locked. The spin of the particle is always along the direction, point along the direction of the motion, the momentum. And so if we subject this particle to external fields, the momentum will change, but the spin of the particle would also change. And when a spin of the particle traces a trajectory on a sphere, we get a Berry phase. And that Berry phase modifies the equation of motion. So one can think about that as the classical analogy would be to have a top. And if we try to change the direction of the motion of the top, we would encounter the force acting in the direction perpendicular to the direction we want the top to move. In this case, the special thing about the our top is that the direction of the rotation is always the direction of the motion of the particle. So this can be captured in the classical equation of motion for particles. It was first done in the context of solid state physics by Chang and Niu. We write down the equation of motion for each particle in phase space. So we have x dot and p dot. And the equation for p dot is the usual equations in which the change of the momentum is the total force, consisting of the force from the electric field and the force from the magnetic field, the Lorentz force. In the equation of motion for the coordinate, we have x dot equal to this term, which is the group velocity computed from the dispersion relation of the particles. But if these particles have a spin that is locked to the direction of motion of the particle, turn out that there exists an additional term in the semi-classical equation of motion that has the same form as the Lorentz force for the change of the momentum in time. This term can be thought of as the Lorentz force in momentum space. The motion of the particle in momentum space induce a force in the equation for x. The equivalence, the analog of the magnetic field in momentum space is this Berry connection, Berry curvature. This Berry curvature for a particle, relativistic particle, has a form of the magnetic field of a monopole located at the center of momentum space. And the sign of the monopole field depends on whether the particle is left-handed or right-handed. So for right-handed particle, the sign is plus, and left-handed particle, sign is minus. So this Berry curvature is the derivative, the curve in momentum space of the Berry phase that one can compute by dragging the solution to the massless Dirac equation in momentum space. So this was known in the context of condensed matter physics. And if we now try to write down an equation, so this is the equation that is implicit because we have both x dot and p dot both on the left-hand side, on the right-hand side. And we have to solve it. The solution is a little bit complicated. So I just highlight the most important term for anomalies that we found here. Here we start to see E dot B. That is suspicious. This must be related to the anomalies. So from this equation of motion of single particle, we can derive the Liouville's equation for the evolution of the phase space density. And that equation of motion also has a term proportional to E dot B in addition to other terms. So now if we write down the equation of the conservation of charge, we find that there is one, in the equation of conservation of charge, there is one term in the equation that is proportional to E dot B times this integral. Okay. So this integral is the integral of the product of the Berry, the magnetic field in momentum space times the derivative of the distribution function in momentum along the direction of the momentum. So again, there's one very important example, the example of Fermi liquid, in which this integral can be evaluated very easily. A Fermi liquid Fermi gas has a distribution function that is zero in some region in momentum space, that is one in some region in momentum space, and is zero outside. For this distribution function, the derivative dn over dp is non-zero only on the Fermi sphere. And the integral here is nothing but the total magnetic flux in momentum space through the Fermi sphere. And since the magnetic field omega is that field of the magnetic monopole, this integral is equal to 1. It's quantized to the charge of the monopole. So by doing this calculation, we can see that the modification to the kinetic equation from the Berry curvature due to the fact that our particle have a spin locked to the direction of motion correctly reproduce the anomalies through the kinetic theory. You can see here that there is a little bit of a contradiction between what we have said about the nature of the kinetic theory and what we have found here. We have said that the kinetic theory, in the kinetic theory, we follow the trajectory of all the particles, and so their number has to be conserved. On the other hand, here, doing some manipulations with the Liouville's equation, we found that the particle number is not conserved. What we have hidden here is the fact that this equation has involved, the kinetic equation involved a magnetic field omega that is singular at the center of the momentum space. And so the kinetic equation, strictly speaking, cannot be applied at the center of momentum space. However, this calculation is still valid because in Fermi liquids, nothing interesting happened inside the Fermi surface. All the interesting physics, low energy physics, happened on the surface of the Fermi surface. All we know is that everything inside the Fermi surface is rigidly fixed. The occupation number, whatever happened, the occupation number has to be equal to 1 all the time. And so this calculation will tell us that the anomalies is captured in a very non-trivial way through the dynamics for the kinetic theory of the Landau's quasi-particle that lives near the Fermi surface. The total volume of the Fermi surface changes when we subject the Fermi liquid to an external electromagnetic field. So here we have seen that this the kinetic theory also has anomalies. We can trace how the anomalies from kinetic theory comes from the quantum field theory. It will be very interesting to derive hydrodynamics from this kinetic theory. I think this is doable, but it has not been convincingly demonstrated that the hydrodynamic theory of the type that was found in gauge gravity duality actually arises from the kinetic theory. Okay, so let me just mention that there might be people have been speculating that at the relativistic heavy ion collider, there are some effects that might be related to the anomalous terms in hydrodynamics. Namely, if one look at collisions between two nuclei with non-zero impact parameter, we find a non-trivial correlation between positively charged pions and anti-correlation between positively and negatively charged pions. And there are some proposals in the literature that this effect might be related to the non-zero term in hydrodynamics relating the current with the magnetic field or the orbital motion of the quark gluon plasma. I think the topic is still controversial, and there are competing proposals for this for explaining this effect. So let me conclude. There are non-trivial effects of anomalies in hydrodynamics. These effects arises from gauge gravity duality. I think it is one of the examples where gauge gravity duality have given us non-trivial new information that that became very useful. We also found that kinetic theories also know about the anomalies through the Berry curvature terms that we have to write down in the semi-classical equation of motion of the particle. What I want to emphasize here is that we have seen here a very deep connection between quantum and classical physics. The triangle anomalies are usually perceived as very subtle effects that come out from loop diagrams or the measure in the path integral, very non-trivial quantum mechanical, quantum field theoretical phenomena. On the other hand, hydrodynamics is a classical theory. We just write down classical equation of motion and follows the evolution. And it turned out that if the constituent particle of the that made up your fluid comes out from a quantum field theory with an anomalies, then these anomalies would appear in hydrodynamics, classical, already at the classical level. So there might be other manifestations of the quantum physics at the classical level that we are still trying to understand. Thank you very much.
So, who wants to start off the questions?
When you were talking about the kinetic theory with that singular term at small momenta, It's clear why it appears in a way, but on the other hand, is there a way of writing a regularized version of this theory so that, for example, it will be useful for numerical simulations, where sometimes you wouldn't know if you will be entering all the way in that infrared region or not?
What can speculate about that? I think in order to write, so at when the chemical potential is much larger than the temperature, there is no problem. I think you can forget about the center of the momentum space, and the occupation number is always one there with the exponential accuracy, so there is no problem. That's when the temperature is of order the chemical potential, or where the chemical potential is zero, that's where there might be a limitation of that kinetic equation, or there might be a regularization of the type that you were alluding to. Yeah, there is probably a way to do that. I think one has to include antiparticles into this picture and follows the anomalies flow from antiparticle to particles. I think there might be a way to do that, but I haven't thought very deeply about that.
Can you incorporate the gravitational anomaly in your kinetic theory treatment also?
There are some effects that I think eventually we should be able to do that, but at this moment we don't have the we cannot convince ourselves that that we have this effect in this picture. So we have to put the kinetic equation in curved space, and that gives rise to a lot of subtleties. One of the subtleties is that this equation that is written here doesn't seem to be Lorentz invariant. So I'm writing down this equation in three-dimensional notations. The usual usual kinetic equation can be written in a manifestly Lorentz covariant way. The very curvature term make it more subtle. But there is still a Lorentz invariance, and I think we can put that in curved space as well.
So how direct is this connection between the microscopic anomaly and the hydrodynamic term? If you know the anomaly, can you write down exactly the corresponding term
yes.
in the equation of motion with all the coefficients?
Yes. So. So, for example, in the current of the charge that carries the index A, there is a coefficient. There in the current of A charge, there is a term psi A times the vorticity, and the psi A is equal to an anomaly coefficient times the product of the chemical potential of charge B and charge C, and then we sum over B and C. In the simplest case, for example, of massless electrodynamics, this A may be a axial charge, and B and C are the vector U1 charge, and that coefficient is 1 over 16 pi square. So we know exact coefficients from the quantum anomaly.
And did you say this is now derived somehow directly within the field theory, or does it rely still on the ADS-CFT, or is it a guess, or what is its status?
We can derive from hydrodynamics alone.
So how does one, can you give a brief story on how that's done?
I need the blackboard a little bit, so let me put in this, maybe this equation. So I think what happened here is that we have to look at the entropy production in external field. So when you have external field, what we find is that there is an entropy production coming from the Ohm's heating. So it's E dot J, that's the normal terms. It's always positive. But there is one thing that comes from anomalies, that is you inject particles with a rate equal to E dot B. You're injecting particle in the plasma, or you're taking off, and that gives rise to a change of the entropy equal to mu divided by T times this E dot B. That can be either plus or minus sign. So that's already dangerous if you don't do anything with your hydrodynamics. So you have to modify the hydrodynamic equation so that this extra E dot B term in the entropy production doesn't appear. And that's how, and we crank up the, you try to write down the most general type of term you can in the external field, and you find everything is fixed almost completely by this entropy argument.
So it's not derived directly from the microscopic theory, but with the aid of the assumption of the second law of thermodynamics working. Is that right?
Yes. So in this way of
it's deriving, kind of at a phenomenological level, but assuming that the second law works.
So this was the way that we derived the hydrodynamic equation. Later on, people also managed to derive the same relationships using the existence of a partition function of a thermal, the existence of the thermal partition functions in external field. So imagine that you can put your system in arbitrary static electromagnetic field and gravitational field. The existence of thermal equilibrium will tell you that this term exists with a well-defined coefficient. So that also has been done.
Just so we talk about different kind of we talk about anomalies, but sometimes the anomaly may have different kinds. As far as I know, that for example, like ABJ anomaly may be captured by one loop diagram or this major of path integral. It's not invariant, but I also heard that some people regard this Tohoff anomaly as the obstruction to gauging some global symmetry. I don't know whether there is different kind of anomalies in the setting of hydrodynamics, whether there are something like obstruction of gauging certain global symmetry in your case.
So in the cases that we consider these two types are the same. So for example, in massless electrodynamics, the loop diagram give rise to the ABJ anomalies, and if you try to gauge both the left-handed and right-handed currents, you find that the total, the theory that you write down cannot be gauge invariant under both if it is purely a 3+1 dimensional theory. So in maybe these are only the simplest case that we have looked at. We have not looked at other cases.
This is a very general thing. I'm not sure it makes sense, but I know people in doing condensed matter often relate an anomaly, a non-conservation on the surface, to a flow from the bulk. So you're working in that kind of framework here, ADS-CFT. Is there any similar kind of description that works here as well?
Well, the ADS-CFT make that rather explicit, the five-dimensional Chern-Simons term in the bulk is basically the term that you would write down if you want to, you would add to the four-dimensional action to make it gauge invariant. So there is almost a direct parallel between the five-dimensional Chern-Simons term and the anomalies in the field theory that it's dual to.
Is there also correction to 1 plus 1 dimensional hydrodynamics due to Chern-Simon term in ADS3?
1 plus 1 dimension hydrodynamics is a little bit strange, because if you follow the same logic, you find that there is also a modification, but it appears already at the ideal, at the same level as the ideal hydrodynamics. So there exists a theory, there exists a set of equations that would encode within the hydrodynamic framework the anomalies. But the effect of anomaly is even stronger than in 3 plus 1 dimension. I don't know any example that where I can say right away that there is a physical system that should be described by this hydrodynamics.
Any more questions? OK, then let's thank the speaker again.
Thank you.